VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm back. Although, Alison, I understand you did an outstanding job. In the studio this week, in addition to the aforementioned Alison, we have Rory K. Smith. And down the line, following the England team, we have the excellent Matt Hughes. This was an international week, which some people find utterly deflating. Other people kind of enjoy. And let's start with England and San Marino. Matt, I'm going to start with you. No real surprise about the score. It was 6-0. I think the most exciting thing pre-game was everybody from San Marino pretending to act really, really offended when Roy Hodgson made that stupid crack about the England cricket team being able to play football. There's not much to say, right? Job done, 6-0, qualification, all good, right?
Pretty much. I think in these mismatched games, all you can look for is individuals to take the opportunity, play well, impress the manager. And in that context, I thought Shelby played pretty well, passed the ball, was interested, busy. I thought Barkley does what Barkley can do against poor teams. And I was a bit disappointed with Jamie Vardy. He didn't really take his chance, so bit of a mixed bag. But as you say, the most important thing is they're qualified, and now Roy can spend the next 9 months fine-tuning things and hoping and planning to avoid unmitigated disaster in the finals, which is what normally happens.
I was struck by Xavi because I think he's had a very good start to the season, and if Hodgson's game is going to be predicated on having a passing midfielder in front of the back four with maybe, you know, two guys around him or more energetic like Henderson and Delph or whatever. Yeah, Shelby's a good alternative to Wilshire, who's always hurt, and Carrick, who's getting older day by day, minute by minute.
I enjoyed Shelby's performance, but I mean, we shouldn't get overexcited by what you can do against San Marino. On the other hand, it was a curious match, curious pitch, curious opposition, curious vibe. It was all about Rooney and nothing else. Honestly, I can't remember a team qualifying the first for a major competition and being so downbeat about it. There was very little going on. And Shelby was the only thing about the performance that I thought was interesting, potentially exciting. Well, I know what Walcott can do. I wasn't sure that Shelby would act like that responsible midfielder there to release pace, release talent, create ideas. And he wasn't like overexcited, puppy-like. I mean, sometimes for Swansea last season, you felt he was just trying things that were never going to come off, and he would give away possession or make the wrong decision. He was really quite mature and, as I said, interesting. So, albeit it was a curious game and maybe, you know, against better opposition, he might fade or be inhibited. That was the only thing worth talking about.
We can either talk about Shelby, Rory, or we can talk about Wayne Rooney getting to 49 goals, equaling Bobby Charlton's all-time record, one ahead of Gary Lineker. Judging from you don't seem particularly excited by either prospect.
There's no bunting on Rory's shoulders, is
no.
There?
I think it's good that Rooney didn't break the record against San Marino.
So the usual snipers can't be like, ha, you broke the record against San Marino.
I think
as if Charlton was scoring. As I learned from watching Alison on television. Although it's something not Alison said, but
there's
Martin
no need
Luther.
To add that, Gab. You could just let it permeate that. I might be clever.
We have this impression from football in the past, but 20 of Charlton's goals came either against Luxembourg, and Luxembourg were really, really bad back then, or against other home nations who, yeah, I know there were times when they were good, but most of the time it's been utter draw.
Yeah, but I think...
So it's not as if he scored all his goals against Brazil.
Scotland won the World Cup in 1967, didn't they?
They did.
Apart from Scotland winning the World Cup in 67.
More important is the fact that countries like, for example, Turkey, at that stage, were not the Turkey of today. It wasn't as hard to score against Turkey in 1962 as it is to score against Turkey in 2015, or whatever year it is at the moment. So it's not that. I just think more from his point of view, I think it'll mean more to him to score against Switzerland at Wembley, or I guess even Estonia at Wembley if he doesn't score tomorrow night, and break the record then. I think it would have been a little bit of an anticlimax had he got sort of four against San Marino in front of kind of 30 people and their dogs in Serravalle, and had to do it with, as well as a contingent of people chanting no surrender.
Right. Serravalle, it's not in Spain. Okay, so if Rooney turns 30 next month, if Rooney's last two seasons are like his next two seasons, before his 32nd birthday, he'll be like the fourth or fifth all-time leading goal scorer in all of Europe. He'll be past the 60-goal mark. He will have broken Peter Shilton's record. He'll have like 129-odd caps. And he still won't even be 32 yet. And in that same time period, he'll probably be Manchester United's all-time leading goal scorer, and he will have moved up to sixth place in United appearances. Is this the kind of thing that we're going to, Husey, that we're going to appreciate him more when he's gone, and love him more when he's gone?
I think we will appreciate him more when he's finished playing. I think he will set records that, you can't say they'll never be broken, but it'll take a long, long time to break. I think it'll be a long, long time before England produces a striker who's going to score 60, 70 international goals. In Charlton's records stood for 47 years, and if you just look at the number of English strikers playing in the Premier League, how difficult it is to break into the top clubs, and also the sort of difficulty of prolonging, having a long career these days, given the intensity of the fixtures. I think Rooney's record could stand for a very long time. I think he's kind of slightly unappreciated, and the record is, as you were alluding to earlier, uses a stick to beat him almost. I don't think it's because of who he scored the goals against. I think it's because of his poor tournament record other than 2004. Charlton obviously won a World Cup and played in one of the greatest games ever in 1970. Rooney just hasn't done that, and that I think is what is held against him. So to be remembered as a real great, I think he has to maybe not win a tournament, but light up a tournament and get the nation excited again. Next summer is a great opportunity to do that.
Alison, how far back do you have to go among English strikers to find a striker better than Rooney?
Better in what way? They're all
in whatever
different.
Way you choose they're to define. No, they're all different. They're all different. Yes, yeah. And
Carl Schutt.
Exactly. Would you say Rooney's better than Carl Schutt?
Better than
Lee Chapman?
Gary Lineker has got a comparable scoring record.
Okay, but do you think he's better? And he's more handsome, but do you think he's better and funnier?
Probably, in some weird way, Gary Lineker had a connection with the fans that Rooney doesn't have.
Okay.
Maybe he'll do something astonishing in the next 2 years, and we can't stop talking about it.
You get the final word on Rooney?
The numbers don't lie. He's the best striker, certainly of the modern era. I think not. If you just think about it, his longevity is extraordinary. He came through at 17, and he'll be doing it into his injury, notwithstanding, into his mid late 30s. Lineker and Shearer's international careers, by comparison, were relatively short. Shearer came in young, but finished very young. Lineker didn't establish himself till well into his 20s and retired relatively young. So you have to admire Rooney's staying power, really, which is all the more surprising, given we all said when he came through, well, he'll be a very kind of old 30, and he'll get fat, and all those sort of things. So he's done really well, and we should respect him for it.
There was talk a while back about Roy Hodgson wanting a new deal, or maybe being given a new deal. Can you just update us on this? Because he's had two major tournaments. This will be his third. Why does he want a new deal? Or does he want a new deal?
I can't think of anyone who has enjoyed the trappings of office more than Roy Hodgson. He loves being the manager. He loves being the manager for the rest of his life. Sort of loves the status. He loves swanning around UEFA committees. Loves wearing the blazer. Loves having the opportunity to hold court. He even likes talking to the media, which is pretty unusual for any manager these days. So, yeah, obviously he wants a new contract. I think the FA are taking the sensible view, which is to judge him on the tournament, and he has to obviously improve in the World Cup to get a new contract. my view is that he probably has to reach the semi-finals, which would be seen as England moving on an upward curve and a sort of tangible achievement, given we've been a quarter-final team at best for quite a long time. There are relatively few alternatives coming through, so Hodgson staying for another 2 years, taking us to Russia in a very, pretty straightforward qualifying group, has some appeal. Having said that, if they bomb out in the group or second round, I think he'll be gone, and we'll be looking. He'll either be the continuity candidate of Neville, Southgate, or the kind of flavour of the month, which at the minute is Alan Pardew, Gary Monk. Obviously, next summer it could be completely different, but those are the options as I see them at present.
Matt, you sounded quite sneery when you said you'd never met anyone who's enjoying the trappings of office quite so much. But isn't it a good thing that the England manager likes being the England manager?
It is a little bit, and I'm probably more sneery than I should be. But I think he likes the trappings more than the job in some senses. That's what I was getting at.
Roy, I know you're not an England fan, but hypothetically, if you were, I always find it curious how people, you know, judge on tournaments and whatever else. I think England played awful football at Euro 2012. I mean, really, really bad. And it's not necessarily his fault, because he just got there because of the diabolical person in charge of the FA at the time he was appointed, didn't give him any time. But then maybe they were a little better at the World Cup, but they still finished last in a group.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I take Hughesy's point. I have an enormous amount of respect for everything Hughesy says and does, and so I don't like disagreeing with him. I can see why the FA attempted to judge on the tournaments, but then there's so many variables within a tournament context. So it could be that they get drawn in a really hard group, or they lose two players through injury, or they get a bad penalty call or a bad red card or whatever, and that kind of costs them their place in the knockout stages, or say they happen to get drawn against France or whatever in the last 16, or Spain or not Holland but somebody else, and they get knocked out because of blah blah blah, it's a dodgy penalty or whatever. I think you have to look at the direction of travel more than anything. To me, I can understand why the FA are holding off. I can understand that because of what's happened in the past and the long contracts and all that. In light of the fact there's not that many alternatives, it would be a bit weird to sack Hodgson because England only reached the last 16 and didn't play sort of ticky-tacka. Right. That would be a weird decision. I think that he's qualified well. He's bringing through a more exciting new team. I don't think they'll win it. I think the semi-finals is probably a push. It would be easier to give them a new contract if they've done well in the tournament. Ultimately, I think you have to look around and say, right, well, if we get rid of Hodgson because he only gets the last 16 or only gets the quarterfinals, then realistically, who might conceivably do any better?
All those people that they mentioned before. Pardew, Monk, Gary Neville, Gareth Southgate. Hugely, I have a question for you. How much does Hodgson make?
He's paid £3 million a year, which...
Okay, I have a solution here. Give him another 2 years, but say, right, you're only getting £1 million a year, because frankly, you've made more than enough money in your life. You're an extremely wealthy man. You love this job. If you win the World Cup, we'll give you a bonus of, or win the Euros, we'll give you a bonus of £5 million. But there's no reason for you to make £3 million a year for a job that you would realistically probably do for free, because you're an old man, you've made your money, you don't need the money, and we'd rather go and spend this money on more playing fields or maybe saving some of all these jobs that I've caught from the FA. Does that sound like a good plan, Hughesy? Do you think you'd take it?
But it doesn't really work like that, does it? And the FA aren't short, really. And there's a redundancy round at the moment, but the FA are not short of money. If they want to...
What do you mean they're not short of money? Didn't they lay all those people off to make playing fields? Or did I read that wrong?
Well, they're trying to build more 3G pitches, but, I mean, I'm sure there are better ways of saving money than making the England manager take a huge pay cut. The England manager's always been overpaid, but in the context of recent ones, he'd actually paid relatively modestly. Capello was on about twice as much money.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, you had to pay Capello a lot of money to get him. You don't necessarily have to pay Roy Hodgson a lot of money to have him stick around. What else is he going to do with his life at his age? What, go manage in Saudi Arabia?
That is so ageist, Gab. You're paying him for all that experience. He has managed all over Europe. He's learned loads of languages. He knows how international football works. He brings experience. And to punish him for having been around a long time and maintaining enthusiasm is just ageist.
Okay, listen, do you believe his enthusiasm for the job depends on how much money he gets paid?
No, but Gab, you're a pretty enthusiastic chap, and
yes,
you clearly love doing the podcast, and I gather we pay you for it, do we?
Yes, you do.
Would you do it if you weren't paid, Gerber?
Okay, well, first of all,
what else you do with your life?
I'm not quite as wealthy as Roy Hodgson. Second of all, I'm not in my 60s like Roy Hodgson. My kids aren't all grown up. I've got school fees and I've got expenses and whatever else. Roy Hodgson, at this stage of his career, does not.
He's closer to death. And you're not. That is rude.
What's he going to do? Like, what is he? Seriously, can I just say something? This is what, that extra $2 million. Look, I don't really care. It's a negotiation, right? In any negotiation,
it's compensation.
No, it's not. Stop it. He's not about to die. In any, that's morbid. Right? In any negotiation, you try to get somebody, you pay somebody as little as possible, while still having him take the job. Right? I mean, this is just common sense.
Glad I don't work for you.
Sorry?
Glad I don't work for you.
Yeah.
Victorian Milone and Marcotti.
Well, you know what? That's the whole basis of a market economy. He wants this job. He's been around the world.
Do you reckon this is Gab's pitch to take charge of the Times' sort of forthcoming cuts?
No, but I mean, I don't know. With all due respect, you're talking about Roy Hodgson here, right? You're not talking about Jose Mourinho.
You can make a case.
Or Pep Guardiola.
You can make a case for incentivizing his contract more without question.
You can make a case for the fact that he loves England. He wants to be the England manager.
You should punish him for it by taking his money away.
How is it a punishment to be paid £1 million a year? Plus, say, another bonus of however much you want if he actually does something.
You can apply that logic to all players and all managers. They'd all do it for much less than they do it for now. But it is a basket case of an economy football. But
I think that there's a pretty big difference there. Because if you, like when Wayne Rooney had his contract negotiation with United, if United weren't going to pay him what he wanted to, he would find somebody else who would. Do you really think there's somebody else in the world who would give Roy Hodgson £3 million a year and he'd be happy to go there?
Yeah, another country would, definitely.
Wales seem to be the other big story. They could have qualified if they'd beaten Israel at home, which they didn't, but certainly they come very close. They're very likely to qualify. Everybody seems to be really enjoying this because if they qualify, it'll be Wales' first tournament appearance since 1958. And I actually watched them. And Alison, it strikes me that it's actually a pretty... I know it started horribly for Chris Coleman, but it's actually a really good team with, like, movable parts working together. Two outstanding players, in my opinion, and Aaron Ramsey and Gareth Bale. A back three. It's kind of cool. It's kind of different, no?
Well, he plays a back three because there's a dearth of practice central defenders that he can call upon.
There's one, though,
that's
very... Ashley Richards is very tall. So the one guy he has is tall.
Ashley Williams.
Yes.
Actually, well, when you said they have two top-class players, I would include Ashley Williams in that.
Well.
He is astonishingly good.
Yeah, because you'd swap Ramsey in for Ashley.
No, you just add another one.
You just say three outstanding players. Yeah.
Okay, but be realistic here. But yeah, that's fine. They're very good, yeah.
Yeah.
They're on the same level, Bale and Ashley Williams, sure.
Well, I think there are lots of reasons why the Wales story is a nice, warming one. The first is, as you alluded to, that Chris Coleman had a bad start and people were not very enthusiastic about his appointment. But I think anyone who got appointed in the circumstances after Gary Speed's death, there would have been negativity around it and a bit of glumness. So he stuck at it. He's managed to create a means of gelling together things that shouldn't gel together. It doesn't often work when you have such a disparity in... You know, Gareth Bale, you know, the most wanted player. Man United, I don't know what Man United would do to get Gareth Bale, but they would do anything, I suspect. You know, he's famous. He's international calibre. He's something very special. He plays for Real Madrid. You've got him, and then you've got players that no one's really ever heard of who manage to all rub along together and get on together and work as a team, and that's supposed to be one of the most difficult things to do. You're supposed to look at a team like that and think, oh, it's jarring, oh, he's got no one to pass to and no one's passing to him and it's not working. Or you end up saying, oh, well, the star players, you know, they're looking a bit lazy and they're not putting in the graft you need to if you've got a team that have some championship players in it. But they all do, and I don't know if they just feel particularly Welsh suddenly, and they didn't in the past. There's a sense that they belong as a group, they have an identity, they work hard for each other. And it is really nice to see someone like Gareth Bale. He looks more comfortable playing for Wales than he does for Real Madrid, which is odd.
If you speak to people around Bale, they say pretty uniformly that he really likes the responsibility that comes with being Wales's like number one guy.
Well, he's Rafa's number one guy in Madrid now.
Rafa's been told he's his number one guy. No, I think Bale really does enjoy that kind of sense that it is on him. It might be really, really different if it was just Bale and there was no Ramsey. I take your point that Williams is a different type of top class, but they are all three of them are key parts of that system. Then if there was no Ramsey, Bale might feel more isolated. But because he's got Ramsey there, I think there's somebody else that he looks at and thinks it's not just me who can settle this game. But at the same time, I think he likes the fact that it probably will have to be him who settles the game.
Susie, you're sort of Welsh. What I'm fascinated by is that the goalkeeper, Hennessy, in the last 4 years, he's under contract with Crystal Palace. When I say he plays for Crystal Palace, I think it's something in the last 4 years, he's only started 15 league games, and 12 of those were on loan at Yeovil. And yet, doesn't seem to be a backup. He doesn't seem to mind being a backup at Palace, and he steps in and gets the job done very, very well for Wales. Is it because there are no other Welsh goalkeepers, or is it simply, or is this whole thing that, ooh, keepers need to play regularly, is that a bit of a myth?
I think it helps, clearly with goalkeepers in particular, but I think the remarkable thing that Chris Coleman has done, and not just Chris Coleman, Michael O'Neill, Northern Ireland, and it's something Hodgson might have to learn from, is he gets players that aren't playing for their clubs, and he turns International Week into kind of the week of their season, really, and they look forward to it and they prepare for it as if they would the club game. It's not an extra sort of onerous thing they have to do like some of the England players in the past have viewed it. And they come to their countries and they really do perform and they gel together, and it says a lot for the manager, really.
That's a really good parallel. You see that with a lot of the South American teams, not Argentina and Brazil, but the other ones. Like, this is, you know, there's those like trips every 6 weeks back home to play for your country are kind of like their absolute highlights, and you've got superstars coming together with lower division guys. I wonder, Roy, I know you spent quite a bit of time, I think, with the Wales team or in Wales.
I have been to the Brecon Beacons, yeah.
All right. And what strikes me, though, is that there's a core of like 8 or 9 players who are sort of all roughly the same age, mm-hmm. sort of that 24 to 27 age group. In fact, I think Ashley Williams is the only one who's substantially older. Does that also matter, the fact that all these guys presumably started, they all played at youth level together, and they all kind of...
Yeah, there's actually quite a lot who've got
connections. It's like a club team, basically.
Yeah, I think the fact they're all the same age obviously just logically helps them have more in common. And then I think there's a few... Is it Chris Gunter and Ramsey who have played together ever since they were kids? It might be Gunter and Bale, I can't remember. It's one of the two. There's a few little things like that. They all kind of came through same age group teams, some of them from the same sort of grassroots sides. The thing that I think is really interesting with Wales is, do you think Ryan Giggs... I know it was more difficult to qualify for other tournaments in the past because Michel Platini has created this wonderful expanded Euros, which we were all on board with from the start.
I was.
That has really helped the entire continent.
It dilutes the quality.
But do you think Giggs looks back on all those sort of dodgy injuries that he pretended he had to get out of international duty with a bit of regret?
I'm not sure Giggs was the driving force behind those injuries.
But do you think then he looks back, let me rephrase the question, do you think he looks back on all those dodgy injuries he was told he had to put out of international duty with regret? Does it, Wales 10 years ago, the quality of player, if you equate Giggs with Bale, isn't vastly superior to what they had 10, 15 years ago.
But you wouldn't, with all due respect to Ryan Giggs, are you really going to equate Giggs with Bale?
I think Giggs at his peak with Bale, yeah, absolutely. Bale might be better, might be a bit better, I'm not sure, but there's no vast difference between Giggs at his absolute best and Gareth Bale, no.
He was a superstar.
Giggs was an extraordinary footballer.
Gareth Bale moved for a world record fee and scored like 25 goals in the top flight and whatever.
How much did Inter offer for Giggs?
I have no idea how much Inter offered for Giggs, but probably stupid money at the time.
Yeah.
But I think as tremendous as Giggs was in his pomp, I
yeah, possibly.
Okay, I'm going to stop now because then I'll get hate mail. Oh, but how can you say
no.
Giggs wasn't every bit as good as Bale? But you know,
our audience are intelligent people.
I would hope so, but I never. I mean, look, to me, Giggs is a guy who played with a tremendous supporting cast. And if you're passing the ball to Scholes and you've got Cole and York in front of you, and you've got Beckham on the other flank, and you've got Roy Keane scaring everybody, and you've got Fergie on the bench, it's a bit different to me than the context in which Bale played, certainly at Spurs, and at Real Madrid, where you know, things were pretty dysfunctional.
Yeah, he's surrounded by dross at Real Madrid, isn't he? Dross.
No, but there's a level of dysfunctionality at Real Madrid that didn't exist at
you're right. It's a
United.
It's a hypothetical, because who knows what Giggs would have done if he moved to Tottenham. He might have torn up the lead as well.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, maybe.
But I just wonder, I think those two are, whether Bale's better or Giggs is better, I don't know, but those two are roughly kind of comparable. And the quality of player Wales has now, apart from, I mean, maybe what Giggs never had was a Ramsey, I guess. He never had that kind of other world-class player.
Well, he had a manager who didn't think it was... He didn't even countenance the idea that it would make him a happier, better person, better player if he played for his country.
We're going to look at transfers. We're going to, I think, go through this rather quickly because, of course...
Oh, I thought you were going to say forensically.
Well, we can do it forensically, too. The transfer window has come and gone. To refresh your minds or refresh your memories, I put in the major ins and outs for the top six. And should we do this by highest net spend to lowest net spend, or do it in reverse order?
Let's do it highest to lowest.
All right. That would mean we start with Manchester City, with a transfermarkt.de approved transfer net spend of £99.3 million. Obviously, Kevin De Bruyne, Sterling, Otamendi, Delph, blah, blah, blah. It was a busy summer. No financial fair play shackles. Hughesy, what mark do you give them as an A, B, C, D, F?
Give them an A so far, I think. The new players have settled in very well. Sterling's made a difference. Not seen much of Delph and Otamendi yet, and De Bruyne hasn't played. But, I mean, the caveat is they've spent an awful lot of money, but they look to strengthen the team in the key positions. So you have to say they've done well.
Are you happy with the A?
It'll depend a little bit on how they settle. I've got to admit, I was a bit baffled by... They started the season really well. Navas looked really good. They've still got Nasri on the bench, obviously. The price for De Bruyne kept going up. So they just kept saying, right, well, we'll match that. Even as it became clearer and clearer, they didn't really need him, which I find a bit weird. I would say it's an A in theory. It could be a B if not all of the players settle. But yes, they've done what they needed to do.
Yeah, it's very easy after the fact. If City get relegated, you'll give them an F. I mean, right now we're talking about the moves they made. You're happy with an A?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Fine, yeah.
Alison?
Yeah, no, I'm happy with an A. No one seems to care anymore how much you spend, so... If you can get away with it, spend it. Spend it wisely. Spent it relatively wisely.
Yeah, I think they could have gotten Otamendi for less. I think they probably could have gotten De Bruyne.
But it doesn't threaten their existence that they overpaid, does it?
So. Well, it might do, because financial fair play is still around, and we don't know what UEFA is going to find in their accounts, and the restrictions are actually tighter now. It's 30 million euros over 3 years, no longer 45 over 3 years, but, you know. We presume their accountants need to know what they're doing. The other thing, which I think is slightly weird, is the third striker situation. If Figuero and Boney are both unavailable at the same time, you're looking at Sterling or this kid, Iheanacho, the Nigerian kid, who's not really a centre forward and told more than a second striker. I know, I only saw him for that 1 minute he came on. That might be an
Patrick
issue.
Patrick Roberts' chance to shine.
Is he a centre forward?
He can play that.
Right. Well, please tell us more about Patrick Roberts.
Well, you know, he's barely been seen by anybody.
This is
the miraculous thing about it.
You're the Fulham expert. Who is Patrick Roberts?
He's a very intelligent young man with pace who can score goals and terrorise defences, but he's still terribly young and unproven. But I think scouts who've seen him play and people who've worked with him think he could be the real
thing. And he's a centre forward?
He can play centre forward. He's played wide and centre forward.
Okay, following on, in the order of Nets bend, and this kind of surprised me, because it's not a big Nets bend, and yet they were the second biggest spenders by Nets bend. Manchester United, £27.5 million net spend. If they hadn't signed Anthony Martial on the final day of the transfer window, they would have actually made money in the transfer market. But they got Martial, Morgan Schneiderlin, Memphis, Matteo Darmian, Schweini, and they sold, I think, very well. Angel Di Maria, Chicharito, Johnny Evans, Van Persie, they got some money back for. Hughesy, again, your report card.
I think I'll give them a B. I think they're under the end of the window in some chaos, and De Gea shambles, and the Martial fee obviously raised eyebrows. But if you look back to the start of the window, I thought they did well. They brought in some good players, decent prices. Darmian is a very good player. Low fee, £14 million. Schweinsteiger for £6 million, probably a gamble worth taking. Schneiderlin is a good player who certainly would have improved Arsenal, and 25 isn't outrageous for him. Depay looks promising. I think the squad's unbalanced, and the big caveat is the lack of a striker and the lack of support for Wayne Rooney. If he gets injured or has an indifferent run of form, I think they're going to struggle for goals. But unbalanced, Van Gaal did seem to plug most of the gaps, so yeah, B.
Okay, I want Matt Hughes marking my papers. Roy?
Yeah, kind of B minus, Hughes is absolutely spot on. They were very... In fact, I did a piece at the end of July that said they were being boringly sensible in the transfer market.
Yeah, but then that all changed.
It did all change. Schneiderlin, Schweinsteiger, Depay, Darmian, all sensible signings, not particularly overpriced. I'm not convinced Schweinsteiger... I think there's a reason Guardiola was happy to let Schweinsteiger leave. I think that has to be noted. The Martial thing was weird. They've obviously overpaid for him. What I don't get about United is they've solved right back and centre mid. How they've allowed themselves to kind of not have any depth really up front, to the point now where it looks like Fellaini might be the backup striker, I think is bizarre. I'd have kept Chicharito. I don't really understand what harm.
So in spite of others, you're giving him a B minus.
He was doing. Right. I'd give him a B minus, maybe a C plus. But I know it's boring. It depends on how Martial settles in.
Alison.
Oh well, C or C minus.
Thank you.
Well, for two reasons. For the smaller reason, perhaps, is that if you look at all the clubs and who they've let go in this window, United's out list is the one that from which you could make quite a nice team. It seems quite ruthless and odd to let so many, you know. I could read it. I'm not going to read it. It's a really long list, and it's the only one where you think, oh, he's a good player. Johnny Evans, De Maria, Hernandez,
Nani,
Robin Van Persie. I could go on. It's just... If you're going to be that ruthless, you've got to have such a clever modus operandi in the transfer window of who you bring in. And it's not been clever. It's looked like it's been a bit hapless, a bit panicked. I agree with Roy. There are some good things about it, and everyone agrees that Schneiderlin's a great player, la 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 la, and Darmian's a good player. But, you know, two good signings, and the rest have been a bit, have they paid too much? Are they fit? And what is the grand plan?
All right, I'm going to give them a D for the very simple reason that obviously they started out very well, very, very sensible at first, but fundamentally they had three main objectives going from July 1st forward. One was getting an alternative to Wayne Rooney. I don't think Anthony Martial is that alternative, and they completely overpaid for him, which is surprising, having actually been sensible with the other ones, having sold Di Maria and Chicharito really, really well. Evans, I think they got a good fee for it, considering his injuries. The other one was they need help at... In defence. I mean, Deadly Blint is not... You don't go through the season there, I think. They pretended they were going to sign Sergio Ramos. That didn't happen.
Do you not think they deserve a little bit of a pass in defence on the grounds that there are so few top-class central defenders?
No, because it's a complete myth. They're out there. There are very good centre-backs
there
out
there. There are, but they're all... There are very good centre-backs out there. A lot of them are clubs... where they won't consider going to Manchester United because there's no point going to Manchester United.
No, but there's also a lot of them who are not clubs that are not Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich.
Are there? There's a lot of them.
Yes.
Who?
Okay, I'm not going to get into this. We can have this on a future podcast because time is tight. But this is, to me, this is one of those complete myths that all of a sudden there's no good centre backs around. It's just, I think, it's just
the thing. No one's saying that. My point of view is that there are good centre backs around, but because they are comparatively rare at this point in time,
it's just a perception.
They are extremely, extremely expensive.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, fine.
They could have spent 50 million and gotten, or 20 million, gotten Kostas Manolas, for example, who I think is better than any of their current centre backs, just to name one. Liverpool net spend 17.3 million. Again, it's fairly contained. They signed Christian Benteke, Roberto Firmino, Nathaniel Clyne, Joe Gomez, James Milner, Adam Bogdan, Danny Ings, and of course they lost Raheem Sterling plus a bunch of other reserve strikers. Alison, let's start with you. What grade do you give Brendan and the transfer committee?
C. I don't know. I don't think you can look at that list and think, "Oh, look who went out." You didn't put Steven Gerrard on the out.
No, I didn't put Steven Gerrard on the out.
Which is quite a big out.
Okay, and Steven Gerrard. Should you give him a C?
And who've they replaced him with? James Milner. I don't know. It just looks a bit.
Rory.
Sad.
I would give Brendan Rodgers an A because all of the ones that are successful will be because of him, and the transfer committee an F because all of the ones that aren't will be their fault.
That's in perpetuity.
Yes, okay. That is my... No, I think they... Like to see... I think the main thing with Liverpool is they've made some individually quite clever signings. Klein's a perfectly good signing. Gomez looked like the pick of them. Milner's useful to have around.
Ings.
I think Danny Ings has made the worst choice of his career, nascent career, but I just don't quite get what the plan is with Liverpool. I don't think that how do you get them all. This is a bit old fashioned, and people always say, "Oh, well, you know, you need a squad to rotate." I like it when teams sign players, and you think, "I see how they fit into their team." And I with Liverpool,
no idea.
I don't get it.
Also, because he changes his tactics, his formation, and philosophy every so often,
which you can say is a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing when it's part of a plan. It's not a good thing when it's some kind of weird,
it's not a good
reactionary
thing if it's not who you are. He got the Liverpool job by claiming to have a very strong, rigid, idealistic philosophy, and he's now become somebody who has the most flexible. You can't call it philosophy because it doesn't exist anymore. The most flexible approach to football there is.
Hughesy, you're great on Liverpool.
I give them a C. I think they've done well. Obviously, they've offloaded, and certainly in terms of the money they've raised for Sterling and getting rid of three problem players in Barini, Balotelli, and Lambert is not a problem, but clearly not good enough for Liverpool.
All right, Chelsea net spend 16.9 million, marginally less than Liverpool. They signed Pedro. Baba Rahman, who I don't think most people had heard of before he arrived, Asmir Begovic to back up Thibaut Courtois, Papi Gilobogi, who was marginally less well-known than Baba Rahman, but cost a hell of a lot less, Radamel Falcao, and of course they lost Peter Cech, Felipe Luis, and Didier Drogba, among others. Rory?
I think it probably has to be a B, because although they haven't done probably the two things that they didn't, that it became clear they needed to do, so central defence and central midfield, they've got problems. I think they.
And so
have,
you give them a B.
Yeah, well,
so generous, isn't
but
it?
But I think they replaced Cech well. I think Pedro's an excellent signing. I think Baba Rahman will do well.
They replaced the backup goalkeeper well.
They've replaced
on that
their
basis
backup
you give them a B. Okay,
but the key point with Chelsea is that they were in a position of strength, especially with the way Mourinho works. It's hard for him to bring in players around the fringes. The one thing I would say that maybe makes me think it might be a B- is Chelsea have got to sort out this thing about signing winners, not playing them, then getting rid of them. It's ridiculous.
It's just a brilliant plan. Hughesy?
I think Rory's being a bit generous on this occasion, which is most unlike him. I give him a C, I think. Most of the players have brought in are backup players, really, aren't they? We don't even know if Rackman's going to play that much. He might play a bit more now, given Ivanovic's poor start, and he could swap Azpilicueta to right back and play Rackman. But otherwise, they've just signed, with the exception of Pedro, they've signed loads of subs, and there are a couple of issues not being addressed. I mean, the centre-back issue was a mess. Why they spent 2 months trying to get Stones, didn't read the signals well, and then made a last-minute attempt to get signed Marquinhos, another A-grade player from a big club, who were in no position to sell him. That's a mess. And they haven't... I'm amazed they didn't sign a central midfield player. Since January, kind of Matic, the all-conquering Matic has been kind of treading water, really. Fabregas has looked tired, and the two of them together against good opposition.
John Obi Mikel's.
And they've not solved it. And don't give me Mikel Ramirez. They've not been good enough for 10 years. They're not going to be good enough now.
You wouldn't know because you don't get to see John Obi Mikel, but he's very well rested. So what's your overgrade, Susie?
C.
C. Allison?
I tend to agree with Matt, actually. It's a C.
Arsenal, a relatively contained net spend of 8.4 million. People pointing out, oh, look, you didn't sign any outfield players. Ha, 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 yuck, yuck, yuck. They did get Peter Cech. I think we've exploded the myth that he's worth 12 to 15 points to Arsenal single-handedly. Hughesy, your grade?
C. I'm even a C minus. It's so depressing being an Arsenal fan because whatever you do, whatever you say, whatever happens on the pitch, nothing ever changes. I mean, if ever there was a year for Arsenal to strengthen and kick on with Chelsea having a few problems and Man United in a state of transition, then this was clearly it. But of course, no, Wenger knows best. Olivier Giroud is going to turn into the best striker ever. Francis Coquelin is a new Claude Makélélé, and everything will be fine. No one will ever get injured, and they'll win the league.
Okay, thank you, Stuart Robson.
Fantasy land, isn't it?
Thank you, Stuart. Roy.
Am I wrong?
No, Hughesy is entirely right. I think probably a C, to quote a line we will hear a lot on this podcast from November, I feel desperately sorry for the fans. I find it astonishing. So Arsenal finished 12 points off Chelsea last season. So even assuming that none of the other clubs improve at all, Wenger appears to have taken literally the idea that Peter Cech is worth 12 to 15 points.
And Jack Wilshere being fit is like a new signing. We've heard this before. Alison?
Yes, simply for the fact that having got Cech, the sense of smugness seems to have sort of blinded the
you guys are all sounding like Gary Neville, arrogant smugness.
What do you do, A?
No, I'm going to give them a B because I think this is what they tried to do. The guy has a plan. We may not agree with it, but this is how he's been operating for the last 15 years.
You could say much the same about God.
Tottenham Hotspur, after two consecutive years of making a profit in the transfer market, they actually have a net spend this year. It's only £300,000. They signed Toby Alderweireld, who a lot of people seem to really like, Clinton Ngie, who I think has a potentially big future, but also some issues. Kieran Trippier, who my favorite Burnley player last year, and a guy who I think has gone totally under the radar in Heung-Min Son, around about 23, 24 million pounds. Everybody's like, oh my God, Barahino, and look, and here's this weird Korean dude nobody's ever heard of. I think the guy's a player. Of course, I thought Lamela was a player too, so you know, you can all laugh at me later, but at least Lamela's still there. Alison.
B plus would have been an A if they'd managed to be clever about getting Berahino in, because I'd like to see Berahino at a club where he wants to be and at a bigger club to see how good he is. And
they try, but Jeremy Peace, in spite of his name, is the devil.
Both parties were a bit dodgy there. They have sold well. All the players that stirred a giggle last season have gone.
I think B again. I think there's this thing about if they got another striker, then fine. A sort of out-and-out striker. Son, I think, might play wide a lot, or as a kind of 10. I think he's an excellent player. I think Alderweireld's a sensible signing. And G, I think he'll largely be a substitute. Kieran Trippier, I genuinely liked having seen Burnley, not just having decided that he's my favourite Burnley player. I think Trippier's excellent. Although in a position where they didn't really need strengthening, just Kyle Walker's not a bad right-back.
Yeah, but he gets hurt, and Trippier had the most touches in the Premier League last season.
He also put the most crosses in the Premier League last season, I think.
Well, Burnley did the same thing over and over again, so it's not that hard.
Then he should be really good at it, shouldn't he?
He is. Lots of practice.
I think sometimes we get a little bit sort of bogged down in looking at one element of the transfer window and lose sight of the bigger picture. Yes, Spurs needed a striker, but it was only a second striker. They didn't need a front line striker. They got Harry Kane. So I'd say B, better than everybody thinks they've done.
Right, time now for some quick hits. Northern Ireland are on the brink of qualification after beating the Faroes 2-1. Alison, they topped their group and they're guaranteed at least a place in the playoffs. What's the secret of their success? And can you answer the question without mentioning team spirit and unity and Michael O'Neill?
Okay, will do. Sort of the opposite of what's happening with Wales. Northern Ireland don't have any stars to build the team around.
Kyle Lafferty thanks you.
Yeah.
He looks like a star, though. He's a very handsome man.
He looks like a star when he's playing for Northern Ireland, and that's the point. That it's the opposite because they've got players that are much of a muchness, but they've worked out to get how to get the most from what they do have. So their set pieces are practiced and incredibly effective.
Okay, so the David De Gea for Keylor Navas and cash swap did not happen. Hughesy, your thoughts on the spin and recrimination that followed? Both to blame? Both sackable offences?
Yeah, they clearly are both to blame, but I think ultimately if you're the buying club, it's down to you to get things in order. And Roma, it did seem extraordinary that Roma would have been attempting to unsettle De Gea and kind of agitate for this deal for about a year, and they left it until the last day of the Spanish transfer window to actually make a bid.
Scotland lose away to Georgia, and now things get really, really tough for Gordon Strachan as their next game is against the world champions, Germany. He says he's hugely disappointed, Rory. What are the chances that Scotland are the only home nation not to make it?
They could still finish third, the Scots. That might be wishful thinking. It will depend on how the Irish do. But that said, having followed the fortunes of the Scottish national team for some time...
Because your great-grandfather played for Scotland.
No, my grandfather did not. My grandfather played for Coventry in Birmingham. He did not play for Scotland.
He was Scottish?
No, the other side of the family is Scottish.
All right.
I would say this, and that is that I have never been more certain that Scotland would lose a football match than away in Georgia.
So is the K for Rory K. Smith kilt?
It is kilt, yes.
There you go.
Kilt is actually hyphenated, kilt sporran.
it's been revealed. After seeing his transfer to Tottenham collapse, Saito Berino tweets he'll never play for Jeremy Peace again. Actually, the way he phrased it, it's kind of funny because it says, like, I will never play Jeremy Peace. So I thought, like, he was referring to the Pearl Jam classic, but no. Now, Gordon Taylor of the PFA says, don't worry, folks, he's going to play. Alison, Berino doesn't really have an option. He has to play, doesn't he?
Well, he's entitled to feel miffed. I don't think he's entitled to go on strike. The club are going to give him, probably going to give him this contract where it's made very clear the price at which he will be allowed to be released. So they're just going to try and get him to play, knowing that he will go for $25 million without it being a weird add-on deal. In January or next summer. So he needs to play to prove that someone should spend that amount of money on him. So all's well that ends well.
There you go. Play nice. Come on, Daniel, Jeremy. Ireland beat Gibraltar 4-0 as Robbie Keane bags two goals. Hughesy, I bet you never expected he'd be within a single international goal of the legendary Gerd Muller, though he's kind of lame because he still needs another 41 to catch the international all-time record holder, which is Ali Dai, who has 109. Can you assess his stature in the game?
Well, in Ireland, he's a complete legend, clearly, but also in European terms, his feats are not quite peerless, but certainly up there with the very best. He's the fourth highest European goal scorer ever after Gerd Muller, Klose and Puskas. So he's keeping him pretty good company. And again, it shows what can be achieved if you start your career young, like Wayne Rooney, and continue.
Iceland have qualified for the Euros, which is quite an achievement for a nation of 320,000. Rory, I suspect you have a bit of a man crush on these guys since you wrote about them on Saturday, or maybe you're just forced to do it. Please tell us more.
I wasn't forced to do it. I volunteered to do it. Amazing story. The best single football story that the Euros next summer will boast, regardless of your national allegiance. Lars Lagerbäck, one of the two coaches, he likes having a partner, Lars Lagerbäck, I think that's very sweet. He's the Swedish guy who used to manage Sweden with Tommy Svensson, took Sweden to five straight tournaments, which is amazing in itself. Now, almost took Iceland to the World Cup in 2013.
Those evil Croatians had to ruin everything.
The Croats ruined it. He's now managed to get them to their first ever major tournament. They won't win the Euros, but they have a lot of unity, team spirit and togetherness, Gab, which I know you'll like. They'll be tough to beat. The best scale of what they've done, they had a really tough group with the Czechs, the Turks and the Dutch. They have won home and away against the Dutch, which leads me nicely onto a question for you, Gab.
Oh, yes.
Because surely Holland bounced back from that defeat to Iceland and now everything's back on track, right?
No, in fact, Rory. They went to Turkey, gobble gobble, and got gobble gobbled. 3-0 was the defeat. Absolutely horrendous defending, put in line to the idea that, you know, once you get rid of Goose Hiddink and bring in Danny Blint, everything's going to be fine. No, it was worse. The defending somehow, I think, got even first. Stephen De Vrij was terrible. Danny Blint was terrible. Bruno Martins-Indy, no surprise, he was terrible too. There's a total dysfunction, and you can go back and read this as saying Van Gaal's an absolute genius for getting them as far as he did in the World Cup. There's probably a lot of truth in that, because there is a serious lack of serious ability in this team. Jasper Cillessen, also awful. I think United fans dodged a bullet there, if that was ever in the works.
you know, obviously they're going to reform and they're going to relaunch with youth. But it does put, I think, some of those World Cup achievements in real perspective.
They can still get a playoff spot, though, can't they?
They can still get a playoff spot, yes. And
because, you know, the Turks have to go to Iceland.
Yeah, but Iceland have qualified, so yes, I'm sure Iceland will be good. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my guests today, Rory K. Smith and Alison Rudd, who joined me in the studio, and Matt Hughes, who took time out from his long journey to St. George's you're going to?
No, they're at Tottenham training today, so all the way on the
M25. Ooh, there you go. Tottenham in beautiful Enfield. Please, you can press that subscribe button if you haven't already, and you can hear us every week. Till next week, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.